Hello and welcome to Safari Conversations, the Singita podcast. Even though we've been around for 30 years, we're relatively new to podcasting. But we are storytellers by nature and we've got so much to share with you. Alongside our conservation partners, we've been busy exploring and protecting Africa's wilderness. So join us as we unpack inspiring, fun, and sometimes crazy stories where you'll meet our incredible people and learn all about the special places in Africa that we call home. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes.
Hello, everybody. My name is Bernard Stichling, and I am a guide at Singita Kruger National Park, based at both Sweeney and Lebombo Lodges. I've been working there for the last 4 years or so. Today, we're talking to a very good friend of mine, Marnus Roodbol from the Endangered Wildlife Trust, about a species of concern, lions. I'm very excited to have this important conversation with you, Marnus. Please tell us your story and how you got into the world of conservation, in particular carnivore conservation with the Endangered Wildlife Trust.
Thanks, Bernard. Very nice to be on this platform. I really do appreciate the time that you guys are able to give us. And always nice to catch up with a friend. So in brief, just to recap, Marnus Roodbol, I'm really impressed that you got my surname correct. Thank you. And I have been with the Endangered Wildlife Trust now for close to 5 years as the Lion Conservation Officer. How it started and how it's going, and it's been a real blessing in disguise, but also has been, a lot of hard work to continue driving yourself and finding motivation and so forth, especially when you do see a decline of a specific species that you're working with. But in short, I got into this industry several years ago, close to 2023-24, and then I started off as a field guide in the private sector. And long story short, I'm not going to give you the spiel since I am 41. I fell in love with lions more than anything else I was doing. So that obviously, but it came from a young age, the drive, the love for animals. And it started off with the fear of the animal instead of respect. And then eventually the fear changed to respect. And respect then changed into admiration. And that changed into basically giving the last 15, 17 years of my life to see where I can help this animal or this species. And hopefully we've got another couple of good years in me before it's time to hand over to the next generation.
Fantastic. And most of your work has been done in the GLTFCA, the Greater Limpopo Transfrontier Conservation Area, right?
Yeah, that is correct. So that area has been quite, it's an interesting area. The reason why is because it's one of the strongholds of lion populations in the entire Africa. There's only 10 of them, 10 strongholds, and this is one of them. Nowadays, it's not just individual parks. They're looking at transfrontier conservation areas. So this one is playing a vital importance into the future population of lions in Southern Africa. And it's a park that is still on the eastern side, I would say, in the Mozambican side. It's still very raw. It's very wild. Compare it to right adjacent to Kruger, which is well established for how many ever decades. And it brings a lot of challenges, which we'll probably get into a bit later.
Marnus, why are lions a species of conservation importance? And what is their role in the ecosystem? And why do we need to help save them?
It comes with a multiple layered question. People generally ask me why lions, what's the importance of them. And if you ask this question to a local person that's not raised, or I've never experienced lions in natural habitats these days, it's a question that they would be able to say, no, it's not important. Obviously, because fear plays a big importance there. But from an ecological point of view, besides the tourists enjoying this magnificent animals, it is... if you take an apex predator out of an ecosystem, you will have various other species doing much better than what they're supposed to be doing. And therefore, so what I'm getting at is your beta predators like spotted hyenas and even your leopards, they might increase. Hyenas normally, they breed quite fast. So they will increase rapidly. So they're also much better hunters than lions. Lion success rate is about 25-30% of all their prey has been taken down. Hyenas are much higher, 60-70%, which means that they would feed on a lot more animals. They would have no pressure on the carcasses. They would have no lions, you know, running in, killing them, applying stress on them, and therefore they'd be able to breed. And it's like humans. If there's no stress and you've got more than enough food, we tend to breed very quickly. So removing an apex predator like that is definitely will impact the ecosystem, whether it's from your beta predators or even to your prey species. And that should be of a concern to everybody, that we continue to protect these animals and to make sure that the remaining areas is vital to their success and to their growth. I think, you know, when it comes to why we need to save a species, I would go with a very simple return of saying, why not? You know, lions historically roamed Europe. We know about Asia. We're looking at countries like Iraq, those places. And over years and centuries or decades, I would say, these animals have been, we're looking at only a couple of areas still remaining within Africa where we can still protect some of them. And why we need to do that is because it's our heritage. It's part of our duty being on this planet. It's the same as protecting sharks, protecting dolphins, whales, gorillas, you know, and the list actually just continues to get longer and longer and longer, the one, you know, once we start talking about it. And I wouldn't be surprised soon if we go into species that's currently frequently available that we're going to be looking at, okay, we really have to start, you know, putting stricter rules, regulations of import-export of these animals in. I mean, historically speaking, we're looking at elephants that were under massive threat, you know, from the 60s, 70s, even before that. Now, in some areas where there's been a lot of attention on them, their population is doing well. Like Kruger National Park, the elephant population is doing very well. But now we just got through the rhino population that took a very large hit over the last 15 years within various parks of Africa. And now the next is lion. And lion has been a hot topic the last 2 years. But actually, what a lot of people don't know is lions have been under significant threat the last 10, 15 years. So we do have a big responsibility. When we share this planet, we share it with animals. And I don't think there's any greater reason why as to why not to conserve them.
Sadly, many may not know that in South Africa, lions are threatened. We have lost about 75% of the home range of lions in the wild. And Martinus, apparently there's a 48% decrease in lion population. Can you talk about what is driving the African lion crisis?
It's a great question, Bernard. It's quite loaded with many layers that one has to address. But yes, so the lion population, the latest estimates that was given was in 2020, where they estimated a 48% decline in the last 20 years. And that's crazy if you think about 20 years. I mean, we've been living on this planet much longer than that. You know, we've been working in this industry for so long that some of us hasn't even noticed that there's a big decline. And we can actually get back to that. That's probably due to tourism that's supporting such a great infrastructure for local people. But if we have to look at why it's declining like that, I think the one thing is the home ranges that's been influenced by the increase of human population is responsible for majority of this. You know, when people move into lion areas, they're moving in with livestock most of the times. And livestock and lions don't match, as we've all seen, or some of us are not aware of it. But, you know, it seldom works. There is systems in East Africa where it works, Kenya and so forth. But there's a lot of financial benefits for these people to have lions in their livestock area. Whereas in South Africa, we have hard boundaries. So what is driving the price of lion parts? That is a very, very tricky question. I think a lot of people would probably go and assume it's probably internationally driven. Asian market for so and so on. However, it's difficult because we need to look at what parts of the animal is harvested. And then we need to look at culturally and historically what of these parts have been used by the people that's utilizing the, you know, the animal. So your knowledge and history around the Shangaan or the Tonga people is great. I'm not sure if you've got any knowledge you can share regarding how they utilized it or the animal.
So in the Shangaan culture or in the Tsonga culture, lions, there's quite a bit of belief and superstition about them. And in traditional medicine, their body parts are used, most especially the hlolo or the finger bone. In fact, the divination tools that most of the traditional healers used are called tinhlolo, which is a reference to the little finger bones or toe bones of especially the big cats and most especially lions. Lion fat is considered very powerful, especially giving bravery to someone. So that's used. The skin is used for various charms, the mane, the tail, the claws, but I think the lion fat and the finger bones or toe bones would be the thing that is most sought after by traditional healers and people participating in traditional healing, whether they're recipients of it or practitioners.
So it just goes you again to show even your like your in-depth knowledge on the cultures is always something I've admired greatly. And it just it brings it back to the point that lions have been utilized by humans for centuries. And it's now only that the numbers are decreasing rapidly that we are noticing this. And I think we're also noticing this due to tourism. Now, tourism has really taken a stronghold within Africa, which is amazing for the local empowerment of people. And it's because of all the attention that we've got on lions now. And as I could say, people come to Africa to see these lions, you know, or to experience their power and so forth. And it's not just a local use animal anymore. Now it's been for many years internationally. Use whether it's for photography being used or whether it's for filming or whether it's actually to consume if one has to go into that line of discussion. But you know what I find extremely interesting is, and I would love to go more in depth into that on a different talk perhaps, is the local usage of lions. And I am really interested to know what is driving that. What is driving that increase?
I can tell you what the increase is, if I can give you my opinion on it. It's an explosion of population. It's a population increase. There have always been traditional healer aspect of traditional society and non-traditional society to some degree. So they have always been there. Now with population increase, there are more traditional healers just because there are more people and more people get the calling to become a traditional healer or a Sangoma. And then by implication, they also need the apparatus that they use for their trade, which is in most cases the tinhlolo, which is in the Xitsonga language, is the bag of bones. And they almost invariably carry lion body parts. So if there's more traditional healers now, there's going to have to be more divination bones, which means more lions are going to have to be used to supply this trade.
Yeah. If we have to look at that from a local point of view, we can discuss this quite some time. If you're looking at that from an international point of view, the bones, as we not everybody might know, is exported quite a lot to Asian countries where lion bone soup and lion bone wine is made. So the lion bone soup, just for those who don't know, has been used for when you have a cold or a flu, similar to what we have, chicken soup. And then the lion bone wine is a very special wine that's used on anniversaries or special occasions when a business deal is slow. So you compare an animal that's been utilized internationally in that manner, and then locally, it's a complete opposite, where it's more focused on, as you mentioned earlier, the spiritual side of the cultures. So yeah, to answer that question earlier on what is driving it and what is the price of it, it's constantly changing and it's something that rapidly needs urgent attention worldwide.
What are some of the methods that poachers use to get lion body parts?
So they use various different methods. Historically, it was more a sign of bravery. You know, within the East African culture, like the Maasai, it was based on you as a young man becoming a fully grown adult, respected man. You needed to go and kill a lion with a spear and then bring back the tail. And that was a sign of strength. Nowadays, lions are poached in two different methods. One is where poison is used. Now, poison is quite frequently available in all of the agricultural farms that surround the Kruger National Park. And other areas, you know, with an ever-growing rapid population of humans, it brings demand for more food. Therefore, this poison is used to lace carcasses. They would put that on possibly a snared buffalo or a snared impala, and then they would leave and hopefully wait for lions to discover it. And the last method that's pretty gruesome is the demand for bushmeat. Has increased, or we presume, we've just seen it, the snare amounts that's been in the parks all over Southern Africa, the amount of, you know, wire snares used to capture bushmeat to sell locally is also targeting lions. And the sad reality is that some of these, I think there was only like 28% or 30% of all snares are actually checked. So if you put out 50 snares, you're only going to look for 20. And these animals rot inside these snares, basically drawing lions out of areas because the lions can smell the decaying meat. Then the lions will go in and then they get captured into the snares as well. And then if they are lucky, poachers, I mean, then if they do come back and check their snare lines, they'll find a lion and then they will harvest the body very quickly. So these are just a few methods that it's pretty gruesome.
Indeed it is. And aside from Africa, where else do you find wild lions and what's the situation there?
Well, at the moment, there is a nice little population, very small lions in India. I think it's in the Gir Forests National Park. But then from the rest of the world, and besides the captive lions, I also read somewhere that America has got one of the highest captured lion populations in the entire world. Higher than South Africa. I'm not sure how correct this is, so please don't quote me there. But when it comes to wild free roaming lions, we literally only have them in Africa. West Africa, the lions are now currently on the IUCN's list of endangered species. I think there's less than 200 or 300 breeding pairs remaining in West Africa. And historically, that used to be a stronghold for lion, eh? And now we're looking at the couple of Southern and East Africa reserves, you know, Kenya, Serengeti's. Then further in Tanzania, you have Selous Game Reserve, Ruwa. And then South Africa, you have the Kruger National Park and the Greater Limpopo National Park next door and Botswana. So it's all really, it's actually just small pockets. When I say small, because there's not numbers that used to be of 250,000 lions that was recorded in the, I want to say 50s or 60s. Now we're looking at a number probably, I would say, below 23,000, maybe 25,000 lions remaining.
Shocking indeed, isn't it? And Maris, what are some of the challenges you face when it comes to protecting the species? What projects are EWT currently working on for lions in the Kruger?
So challenges is always something interesting to discuss. Besides the harsh field conditions that we sometimes do have, I would say the biggest issue most NGOs have is unrested fund or unrestricted fund, sorry. These funds are normally difficult to get due to the fact that most donors are quite interested to know exactly where the funding is going, i.e. for GPS collars or for a brand new vehicle. But the unrestricted funds is vital to the success of any NGO. And this is basically funding that goes towards whatever NGO decides is best, such as salaries, fuel, maintenance of vehicles, you know, we can carry on with that list. So I think that's a big concern that we have to continue the work we are doing. The project that we are involved with within the Kruger National Park, line related, is all of them have been and is still with the collaboration of Sandparks, where we merely support them with whatever they need. You know, collaring lions to counting lions that we've done already this year through a survey. And a lot of people might think, how do you count lions? So it's very interesting. We have what you call a spatial capture recapture study, where you wake up every morning nice and early, go out for an early drive, find lions, take photos of the left and right whisker pattern, and then you take that and you put that into an ID book. And the idea is to try and find as many lions, the same lion as possible, and that eventually, through a lot of scientific rigmarole we're not going to go through, will provide you with a rough estimate of lions that's found in that area. So that was one of the nicest projects that we did. And we are going to continue with a few other projects, more for the rangers to support them where we can. And basically, the rangers themselves do support in some areas to have the lion collars on because it helps them manage their carnivore species in their region. There's been a lot of discussions within the conservation society regarding the purpose of lion collars and branding of lions. For the listeners who's not aware of what branding lions mean, it's as similar as branding cattle. They get a brand mark on them. And most of the reasons why that has been done is because of studies that's crucial to the conservation of lions going forward. And these studies involve veterinary sampling of blood tissue to determine growth or decrease of tuberculosis and other studies like feline AIDS that can cause rife within an area. And I know from a tourism point of view, it's not ideal to be observing these animals with a brand, because it sort of takes away that little bit of wild factor, which I completely understand. However, there's always a fine line in what is supposed to and what is not. And I think, you know, with the threat lions are under these days, the last 10 years, I would say, from poaching syndicates, I think it's crucial and vital to their survival, regardless of the area where they have got a lot of rangers patrolling. One still needs to make sure that you can see where your main prides are from a remote location in order to be proactive instead of reactive to their survival. And I know I might get a lot of flack for this, but I think with a 48% decline of lion population in 20 years, it's just a matter of time before most lions in tourist areas will have collars on. Not all of them from the same pride, but I'm saying at least one or two of the main members. It's important, and I think if the guides relay the message accordingly to the tourists, people might understand.
You know, Maris, it's a little bit like seeing dehorned rhinos instead of seeing no rhinos at all. It's a price I think hopefully all people are willing to pay to see the survival of the species. So if the survival means we're going to have to collar a few to monitor their movements and keep them safe, so be it.
Exactly. And look, even me, I mean, I seldom see rhino because I'm focusing on lion, but when I do, I still enjoy it. And I know it sounds like a cliche, but you know, I'm just seeing that the horn is, or the animal has been protected, or that has been monitored. Someone is on it. Someone is, you know, watching this animal. And yeah, I guess from a photographer's point of view, I understand, but you know, as long as the information is related across in a nice manner where people understand it, then yeah. And also remember, from coalitions, you don't have to collar both males, you know.
And then Singita's conservation partner in South Africa is the Singita Lowveld Trust. One of the biodiversity projects we help support is the EWT's carnivore conservation work across the Greater Kruger. Marnus, how does the Singita Lowveld Trust support the Endangered Wildlife Trust in this, and how can our guests support projects?
Oh, great question, Bernard. Thanks for that. From a support structure, from Singita donates towards EWT on an unrestricted basis, which means that we are allowed to use the funds in whichever manner we feel is needed for the lion project. Again, we're looking at salaries, the employment of new, young, up-and-coming talent researchers, local researchers that is desperately trying to make a name for themselves. So this funding allows that, and we always welcome donors or people to come and approach us and see where they can get involved. I know that everybody likes the idea of a collar because it's something tangible that you can put on an animal and then you have access to that. But we need to really look past that these days from donors' point of view, in the sense of how much is your funding influencing the conservation of a species. And instead of your animal, it's a species as a whole. You know, for lions, it's very important that we get as much support financially as possible, that we are able to distribute this funding within accordance to where it's most needed and where we can support South African National Parks with it.
Absolutely. How do you see the role of ecotourism in preserving lions, Marnus?
Well, that ecotourism and preserving or the preservation of lions goes hand in hand. I mean, you can't have the one or the other. I'm a very big advocate for tourism done correctly. We all know of places where it can get chaotic. East Africa gets extremely congested when a migration is there. But how many people are benefiting? Local people benefiting from ecotourism. You know, I was attending this conference yesterday, and there was a brief study that was mentioning that the private sector on the western boundary of the Kruger, the private reserves, you know, like the Sabi Sands, the Timavati, and so forth, they are responsible for over 6,500 people being employed, or majority of them being from the neighboring villages, which is an absolute amazing feat. Then from national reserves, it's a number they were reckoning close to 4,200 or 4,500 people being employed. Again, everybody locally. So in short, whether it's national or private sector, I mean, probably well over 11, 12,000 people. But it just shows you how much it benefits local people. And we can go with ecotourism and lions, the preservation of lions go hand in hand, but also local people. If you do not support local people in a manner that actually where they need, where they would like, which is job creation a lot of times, then the preservation of lions will come by itself. 100%, in my opinion. If people benefit from an animal, I'm talking especially local people, if they benefit from a species, they will help protect it. If they are not benefiting from an animal, I can't see how it's going to benefit them going forward.
Maras, what do you consider success with regards to lion conservation, and where is there hope for the future?
Great question, Bernard. I think the success of lion conservation will be the direct involvement of local people in an actual physical capacity or in another capacity that I am struggling to still understand, because our numbers are, if you compare it to the people living on the border, on the edge effect of Kruger National Park and Limpopo National Park, the number of people living there, the population is, as we've mentioned previously, significantly high. And people are desperate, they are hungry, they are in need of things that we know the answers to, whether it's transportation, whether it's easier access to water, cleaner systems, and so forth. But the success of lions goes hand in hand with people. And I definitely would say the success of any lion conservation goes hand in hand with tourism sectors being involved in this. And in the national parks, you have these small concessions that's been set aside for private sectors. I think Sangita Lebombo might be one of them. And that benefits not just tourism, but also the area, Sandparks itself, because it means it's an area that they can co-manage with private sector anti-poaching units. And where's the hope for lion conservation? I think what needs to really happen at this point in time is we need to, all stakeholders need to address the issue that there is poaching of lions for body parts. And we need to find out how we can lessen that effect and how we can prevent it from going forward, which is difficult because it's a layered question that is basically entangled within poverty, cultural usage, international trade. So to further, talk about hope and so forth, it's not all doom and gloom. It's something that just needs some small attention, from all the stakeholders, because everybody has got some a role to play within the conservation of lions, whether it's communities, whether it is your private sector, NGOs, government, and so forth. And, even donors that are willing to support this initiative. And it brings me something to think about, the time that we had together in Mozambique. It was something quite special where I was able to share with you even what I'm doing briefly, with lion conservation. And do you remember the time when you were in Mozambique with me? What did you find there? Was it a great experience? I'm not trying to set myself up for a compliment, but I mean, what did you find from that experience?
What I did find, Marnus, is a lot of admiration for you and for the EWT, and just a realization that it's not all beer and skittles. You work very, very hard in very trying conditions. When I joined you that time, that was in midsummer, and boy, was it hot. Temperatures close to or over 40 degrees Celsius, very Spartan living conditions, tents. In the heat of the day, you'd constantly have to move to get to shade. As the sun turns, you'd find a nice little spot under a white syringa on the bank of the Shingwezi River, and 10 minutes later, that sunlight gets you through the gap in the trees, and you've got to move again. The flies, no such thing as cold water. It's all pretty hot water that you're drinking. And then also staying up and working long hours in the night, and then the reward with all your hard work bearing fruition is luring a wild male lion to a bait, darting the wild male lion, and then eventually putting a collar on. And for me to have been able to touch this tranquilized, massive Mozambican lion and place my hand on its massive paw was a memory that'll live on with me forever. And then being able to monitor and track this male lion and see it make progress and, crossing into the Kruger National Park, back into Mozambique and doing what a wild male lion does. It was just fantastic.
That's awesome. While we're talking about experiences, we can always just go back and reflect on always this nice thing about, how can you give it back to tourists to have that? And I think sometimes we just need to catch ourselves out a little bit, whether it's guides, rangers, or even researchers, just try and see a lion through the eyes of a tourist. And that is the hope for the future, in my opinion, is to still be able to show people that and our younger generation to for them to experience lions, elephants, and all the animals in the natural habitat. I think if we all work hard together, we can achieve that.
Absolutely. Well, Marnus, thank you so much for joining us. It is truly fascinating and very important work that you're doing. And I really enjoyed chatting to you today from the Singida Sabi Sand property.
Bernard, thank you guys so much for your time, for Singida, for the platform, and also for Singida for the support that they've shown EWT for a very long time. It's crucial for me that people that's listening understand that we can't do this without all of you. So keep on supporting Singida. And for those who's keen to get involved with some lion stuff, I'm sure you can get hold of me from Singida. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning into another episode of the Singida Podcast Safari Conversations. Until next time.
Thank you for listening. If you want to follow other episodes of our podcast series, Safari Conversations, please follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from or on our website at singida.com.